English Listening Comprehension Test, Autumn 2007, Advanced Level. This test is in four parts. Part 4 has separate directions. In Parts 1, 2, and 3, you will answer the questions asked in the booklet by choosing the best alternative answer according to what you have heard. Mark each answer on the optical answer sheet. The test is about to begin. Now you will hear part one twice. First, listen to it straight through.
Two experts with rather different views are here to talk about oil. Yes, oil. Dr. Cheryl Johnson published a book last year which has as its theme the concept that fossil fuels will dominate the energy economy for the next century. Dr. Jeremy Loft, a former oil industry consultant, set up a solar electric power company 2 years ago. Dr. Johnson will kick off the discussion.
We are not running out of oil, we're running into oil. The world has used 15% of all the oil we believe there to be. That leaves 85% untouched. The world, in fact, has a record volume of proven oil supplies, which lies in pools and reservoirs, and non-conventional supplies, which can be mined from rocks. Canada, for example, has recently declared 175 billion barrels worth of oil from non-conventional sources. That means tar sands, making it the second richest producer after Saudi Arabia.
Cheryl, you must admit that society is jointly denying the whole issue. It has failed to grasp the severity of the problem. That's the core of the problem. Whether or not oil and fossil fuels are running out, we cannot afford to use them. Global warming is a reality. Burning fossil fuels as we do is dysfunctional at best, suicidal at worst, and certainly will prove environmentally and economically ruinous. I predict an environmental disaster with hundreds of millions of casualties. Food supplies will be threatened by increased flooding, drought, and multiplying millions of pests. Epidemics will rage. This is no exaggeration.
I'm not saying that the threat of global warming is not a warning we need to consider seriously, but as scientists have illustrated, it is still a matter for argument. There are some scientists who deny outright that the use of fossil fuels has anything to do with the rise in temperature. There are others who note that the climate has changed in other ages when fossil fuels were not being burned. Whatever the truth, there is no doubt that what we are consistently presented with is the worst-case scenario. The media knows no other story. But Jeremy, let's get back to talking about oil.
Well, people often point to the developing world, asking how we could deny them the right to use fossil fuels as the West has done, the right to develop as the West has done. We must lead by example. We must show them that it is possible through other means. So you say, how quickly could fossil fuels be replaced by solar and wind energy? In 1900, horses were the dominant means of transportation. By 1912, there were over a million cars in the States. The revolution to solar power can happen as fast as the oil auto revolution.
Yes, the economics of the developing countries depend on oil to reach the kind of standards that the West has experienced. And speaking of history, in 1919, the U.S. Geological Survey predicted that world oil production would peak in just 9 years. During the 1970s, the Club of Rome report said that all known oil reserves would be entirely consumed in just 30 years. Not only are there greater reserves than before, but in reality, exploration has not been carried out on the greatest parts of the areas where we know there is oil. That should be looked into.
Actually, we all need changes in our current lifestyles. Air travel is, of course, a big problem. Society will probably need to become more localized. We have to do with less.
People aren't ready for that.
Now listen to the same story in five sections. Look at questions one and two.
Two experts with rather different views are here to talk about oil. Yes, oil. Dr. Cheryl Johnson published a book last year which has as its theme the concept that fossil fuels will dominate the energy economy for the next century. Dr. Jeremy Loft, a former oil industry consultant, set up a solar electric power company 2 years ago. Dr. Johnson will kick off the discussion.
We are not running out of oil, we're running into oil. The world has used 15% of all the oil we believe there to be. That leaves 85% untouched. The world, in fact, has a record volume of proven oil supplies, which lies in pools and reservoirs, and non-conventional supplies, which can be mined from rocks. Canada, for example, has recently declared 175 billion barrels worth of oil from non-conventional sources. That means tar sands, making it the second richest producer after Saudi Arabia.
Answer questions 1 and 2, then look at questions 3 and 4.
Cheryl, you must admit that society is jointly denying the whole issue. It has failed to grasp the severity of the problem. That's the core of the problem. Whether or not oil and fossil fuels are running out, we cannot afford to use them. Global warming is a reality. Burning fossil fuels as we do is dysfunctional at best, suicidal at worst, and certainly will prove environmentally and economically ruinous. I predict an environmental disaster with hundreds of millions of casualties. Food supplies will be threatened by increased flooding, drought, and multiplying millions of pests. Epidemics will rage. This is no exaggeration.
Answer questions 3 and 4. Look at questions 5 and 6.
I'm not saying that the threat of global warming is not a warning we need to consider seriously, but as scientists have illustrated, it is still a matter for argument. There are some scientists who deny outright that the use of fossil fuels has anything to do with the rise in temperature. There are others who note that the climate has changed in other ages when fossil fuels were not being burned. Whatever the truth, there is no doubt that what we are consistently presented with is the worst-case scenario. The media knows no other story. But Jeremy, let's get back to talking about oil.
Answer questions 5 and 6, then look at questions 7 and 8.
Well, people often point to the developing world, asking how we could deny them the right to use fossil fuels as the West has done, the right to develop as the West has done. We must lead by example. We must show them that it is possible through other means. So you say, how quickly could fossil fuels be replaced by solar and wind energy? In 1900, horses were the dominant means of transportation. By 1912, there were over 1 million cars in the states. The revolution to solar power can happen as fast as the oil auto revolution.
Answer questions 7 and 8. Look at questions 9 and 10.
Yes, the economics of the developing countries depend on oil to reach the kind of standards that the West has experienced. And speaking of history, in 1919, the U.S. Geological Survey predicted that world oil production would peak in just 9 years. During the 1970s, the Club of Rome report said that all known oil reserves would be entirely consumed in just 30 years. Not only are there greater reserves than before, but in reality, exploration has not been carried out on the greatest parts of the areas where we know there is oil. That should be looked into.
Actually, we all need changes in our current lifestyles. Air travel is, of course, a big problem. Society will probably need to become more localized. We have to do with less.
People aren't ready for that.
Answer questions 9 and 10. This is the second part of the test. In this part, you will hear 10 short dialogues. Each one involves a different situation with different speakers. You will hear each of them once only. Look at question 11.
George, did you read what happened in Gothenburg?
Gothenburg? You mean where Batman lives?
George, Gothenburg in Sweden. Parts of the central city were closed off after a fishing boat caught and brought to shore what Swedish Navy technicians identified as a World War II mine.
You don't say.
Yes, the fishing boat was getting ready to unload its catch when workers on the dock noticed the bomb. They had to evacuate a large portion of the centre of the city while the bomb was dismantled. And that made a lot of evening rush hour commuters angry.
Answer question 11, then look at question 12.
What will they come up with next? It says here that horse dung is a problem in the streets of Valletta.
Horse manure? No, that's an old problem. It used to be a major problem before people had cars.
No, horse dung is a problem because the horses that pull carriages for tourists had to wear diapers, a bag. And now, A local judge has ruled that that's cruelty to animals because a horse's tail has to be kept free to swat flies. No more nappies.
I can understand that. That makes sense to me.
Answer question 12. Look at question 13.
There was a 15-year-old Dutch schoolboy who hid himself on a couch which was taking his schoolmates on a school trip to Germany.
I heard about it. Wasn't he left alone in a lay-by off a motorway after he smuggled himself aboard on a school trip?
Yes, the teacher left him behind in the middle of nowhere while the rest of the class continued on their school trip to Berlin. And he got home by walking a great distance along the hard shoulder of the motorway until he reached a small village. From there, he caught a train back to Amsterdam.
Answer question 13, then look at question 14.
The news last night had a story about a kitten that got a special police award for undercover work.
Undercover work? A kitten? Do you mean he had a mask? Or did he bark or something?
No way. He helped cops snare a fake vet. He helped arrest Stephen Vassell, who had been performing failed operations on animals. A cop posing as a pet owner phoned Stephen to come over to his apartment to operate on Fred, the kitten.
Oh, no.
And the police had hidden cameras and arrested the fellow.
Answer question 14. Look at question 15.
Dog stories.
Dog stories?
Yes, a Welsh farmer saved a sheep from death as a lamb and has since raised her at home with his sheepdogs. And she has even started herding with her sheepdog mates.
I remember something about that. She can jump through hoops and slide down a ramp, just like the dogs.
Yes, she's very agile, and she comes into the house and sits there watching TV, eating nuts and dog food.
But she'll never be able to bark.
Don't bet on it.
Answer question 15, then look at question 16.
A mother's love never ends. A 50-year-old Russian mom got tired of local gangs in Moscow bullying and beating up her son.
Well, why not? I wouldn't like it either.
So she took up karate to protect her 22-year-old son. She says he's too shy to do anything about it himself, just too hesitant. So she took a karate course, and soon after, she put her karate into practice on one of the bullies. Since then, her son has had no problems, and the bully even offers to carry her shopping bags for her when she comes home.
Well, I'll say.
Answer question 16, look at question 17.
A pensioner was on a skiing trip when he got his hearing back.
Hearing back? Skiing? What did he do, fall and hit his head?
No, he was going back to the hotel, descending from 7,000 feet in a cable car, when his ears popped and he was hit by an incredible wave of noise. Must have been the sudden change in air pressure.
Did he just have his ears full of wax?
No, he'd been deaf for 15 years. The local nurse checked him out and told him he didn't need his hearing aids anymore.
Answer question 17, then look at question 18.
Here's help for people who drink too much alcohol.
Are you trying to suggest something?
Not at all, no. Here in the paper reports the results of a new study about drinking more than 2 cups of coffee or tea per day. It lowers the rate of liver damage in heavy alcohol users to half. At the same time, coffee was no defense at all for people at risk of liver disease from other causes, such as viral infections, you know, viruses.
Well, what are we waiting for? Let's have 2 or 3 cups of coffee right now.
Answer question 18. Look at question 19.
I want one of these.
One of what, dear?
A Welsh inventor claims to have found the perfect solution to rowdy youngsters. Noise. His device emits an uncomfortable, high-pitched, ultrasonic sound that can be heard by children and teenagers, but almost no one over 30. After all, the ability to hear high frequencies deteriorates with age.
Does it work?
It has successfully driven away noisy teenagers from a grocery store in his hometown, making smoking, foul-mouthed youths a thing of the past.
The local shop certainly needs one. I could hardly get past the teenagers yesterday.
Answer question 19. Look at question 20.
A Swiss driver flashed by a speed camera attacked it.
He what? Attacked it?
Yes, he was doing nearly 50 miles per hour in a 30 zone through a Swiss village when he was flashed by the camera. He used a pickaxe to smash the camera free from its mountings, then drove what was left up a mountain to throw it off a cliff.
And
the film and camera were destroyed, but he was spotted by police as he threw it off the cliff and was then arrested. But here's the best part. He faces a fine of about $20,000.
That's a lot of cash.
Answer question 20. This is the third part of the test. You will hear this part twice. Listen to this part straight through.
Hello and good morning. I'm Stephen Payne, and I'm here to talk with Annette Blodgett about the mountain gorillas of the Virunga Park in Central Africa. That is Rwanda, Uganda, and Congo. The Virunga Park is actually a large forest. Annette is the director of the International Gorilla Conservation Programme. Annette, it must be hard for people struggling to make a living around the edge of the Virunga Park to see so much money and effort go into conserving gorillas.
Most people understand the value of the work. They realise that gorillas are now an important economic commodity for all three countries. Still, for local villagers, this is hard to accept because they perceive the government as benefiting while they pay the price. They feel they suffer when animals leave the park and damage their fields or crops, and they don't have a chance to get more land for cultivation. The problem animals are usually buffalo, elephants, forest pigs or baboons, rarely gorillas.
Faced with desperate refugees searching for food in the park, how would you justify refusing them access?
I would say that we need to find food and firewood for them outside the park. It is illegal inside the park, and they have to accept that. It is possible to grow fast-growing trees outside the park, to grow food and vegetables, raise chickens, rabbits and goats. The park needs to go to work with local people to help them to understand how to resolve these problems and find legal alternatives so they aren't forced to go into the park.
Since conservation has not been a high priority for the governments in this region, what got them to change their minds?
We explained that conservation and the welfare of the people are not two different things. They're actually just one thing. For example, the population density around the park is enormous. Around 90% of these people depend on subsistence agriculture. Their plots are on steep hillsides. To be productive, they need enough rain, and that can only be guaranteed by adequate forest cover. And the forest in the parks is the only natural forest left in the region.
How can people benefit from conservation?
Tourism is one example. In Uganda, we've developed a mountain gorilla ecotourism program. This is generating money for the country, and a proportion of that income is set aside in a fund for local community projects. Another way is to establish tourism-based enterprises, such as arts and crafts, dancing troupes, restaurants, small hotels where people can stay. And despite the recent violence, the desire to see such charismatic animals in the wild is a very strong motivating factor. In Rwanda, the number of tourists is steadily increasing.
During the last conflict, what sort of threats did the gorillas face?
You have to look at it in the context of the whole park, not just the gorillas. The instability in the region since 1990 meant that people couldn't cultivate their fields normally. They had to supplement their food and get fuel wood from other sources, so they went into the park. Some illegal soldiers went in and shot the gorillas. Many people hid in the park. They didn't dig proper latrines or garbage holes, putting gorillas and other wildlife at risk of disease. During the genocide in Rwanda in 1994, tens of thousands of people travelled through the Virungas to camps on the Congo side of the park. This increased the amount of poaching and destruction of the habitat. Later, when those responsible for the genocide fled, they laid mines all through the park. People were killed and maimed, and at least one gorilla died.
Now listen to the same story in five sections. Look at questions 21 and 22.
Hello and good morning. I'm Stephen Payne and I'm here to talk with Annette Blodgett about the mountain gorillas of the Virunga Park in Central Africa. That is Rwanda, Uganda and Congo. The Virunga Park is actually a large forest. Annette is the director of the International Gorilla Conservation Programme. Annette, it must be hard for people struggling to make a living around the edge of the Virunga Park to see so much money and effort go into conserving gorillas.
Most people understand the value of the work. They realise that gorillas are now an important economic commodity for all three countries. Still, for local villagers, this is hard to accept because they perceive the government as benefiting while they pay the price. They feel they suffer when animals leave the park and damage their fields or crops, and they don't have a chance to get more land for cultivation. The problem animals are usually buffalo, elephants, forest pigs or baboons, rarely gorillas.
Answer questions 21 and 22, then look at questions 23 and 24.
Faced with desperate refugees searching for food in the park, how would you justify refusing them access?
I would say that we'd need to find food and firewood for them outside the park. It is illegal inside the park, and they have to accept that. It is possible to grow fast-growing trees outside the park, to grow food and vegetables, raise chickens, rabbits and goats. The park needs to go to work with local people to help them to understand how to resolve these problems and find legal alternatives so they aren't forced to go into the park.
Answer questions 23 and 24. Look at questions 25 and 26.
Since conservation has not been a high priority for the governments in this region, what got them to change their minds?
We explained that conservation and the welfare of the people are not two different things. They're actually just one thing. For example, the population density around the park is enormous. Around 90% of these people depend on subsistence agriculture. Their plots are on steep hillsides. To be productive, they need enough rain, and that can only be guaranteed by adequate forest cover. And the forest in the parks is the only natural forest left in the region.
Answer questions 25 and 26, then look at questions 27 and 28.
How can people benefit from conservation?
Tourism is one example. In Uganda, we've developed a mountain gorilla ecotourism program. This is generating money for the country, and a proportion of that income is set aside in a fund for local community projects. Another way is to establish tourism-based enterprises, such as arts and crafts, dancing troupes, restaurants, small hotels where people can stay. And despite the recent violence, the desire to see such charismatic animals in the wild is a very strong motivating factor. In Rwanda, the number of tourists is steadily increasing.
Answer questions 27 and 28. Look at questions 29 and 30.
During the last conflict, what sort of threats did the gorillas face?
You have to look at it in the context of the whole park, not just the gorillas. The instability in the region since 1990 meant that people couldn't cultivate their fields normally. They had to supplement their food and get fuel wood from other sources, so they went into the park. Some illegal soldiers went in and shot the gorillas. Many people hid in the park. They didn't dig proper latrines or garbage holes, putting gorillas and other wildlife at risk of disease. During the genocide in Rwanda in 1994, tens of thousands of people travelled through the Virungas to camps on the Congo side of the park. This increased the amount of poaching and destruction of the habitat. Later, when those responsible for the genocide fled, they laid mines all through the park. People were killed and maimed, and at least one gorilla died.
Answer questions 29 and 30. This is the fourth part of the test. There are five sections. Each section is a separate piece of news. You will hear each section once, and then you will have time to answer that section. Then you will go on to the next section. You will write in Finnish or Swedish. You must write your answers on the special answer sheet. Read question A. Question A. Listen to this section and then answer question A.
From a study at the University of Chicago, children who were overweight at age 2 or later during their preschool years faced a 5 times higher risk of being overweight at age 12 than youngsters who were not overweight early on. These findings underscored the need to maintain a healthy weight beginning in early childhood. Contrary to popular belief, young children who are overweight or obese typically won't lose the extra weight simply as a result of getting older. The study involved 1,200 U.S. children born in 1991.
Read question B. Question B. Listen to this section and then answer question B.
Sometimes it can be difficult to get to a wedding. Mark Origer told how he was made well enough to attend his daughter's wedding last year. He was diagnosed with melanoma, the most aggressive form of skin cancer, in 1999. It spread until it was found in his liver in June 2005. In December, Mark was then treated with genetically modified versions of his own white blood cells. Within 9 months, his cancer was completely gone, and he attended his daughter's wedding a healthy man. This therapy is based on genetically modified versions of the patient's own cells. It is still in trial phase, but scientists believe that it can be adapted to fight other cancers.
Read question C. Question C. Listen to this section and then answer question C.
Going back to school in America in the fall. Kids hit the sports fields running and often hobble back off. High on the worry list for August and September are heat-related illnesses that specialists say are preventable if coaches and players follow proper precautions about limiting workouts on hot, humid days and keeping well hydrated. Much more common, especially in the fall. Too many kids got out of shape during the summer, meaning they're jumping back into practice with weakened muscles. That's a recipe for muscle strains, sprained joints, and bone fractures that can sideline an athlete for weeks. And parents can't even get their kids to take the trash out during the summer months.
Read question D. Question D. Listen to this section and then answer question D.
For a few months after 9/11, architects worried that the era of the super skyscraper was over. But then changes were made. For example, the first tower at Ground Zero to be rebuilt after the attacks boasts some of the most robust safety features ever put in place in a US office building. The new 741-foot skyscraper was built with a core of thick concrete rather than steel. Its beams are protected by 5 times the fireproofing the code requires. Extra water pipes feed the sprinklers in case one line is destroyed. Evacuation stairwells are pressurized to keep out smoke. This is the way forward, the way to make it all safer.
Read question E. Question E. Listen to this section and then answer question E.
Confronting the criticism of health and environmental groups, 3 major nail polish manufacturers say they've removed a trio of substances that have been deemed harmful. The 3 chemicals have been linked to cancer and birth defects. All were banned earlier this year in cosmetics by European Union regulators, but have not been targeted for removal in the U.S. by the Food and Drug Administration. Manufacturers, all with markets abroad, said they've removed the compounds voluntarily under pressure from health and environmental advocacy organizations. Executives at Dell Laboratories in Uniondale say their products are being reformulated to eliminate all 3 substances.
This is the end of the test. You will now have 8 minutes in which to blacken with a pencil the ovals indicating your answers and to check the written answers. Remember to make sure you have written the following information on your answer sheet: your name and number, and the name and number of your school. Also, make sure that the information needed for the exam has been carefully marked in. Thank you.